Hey y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson here to talk Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
All right, Brad, we have to start today by talking about the big James Bond news that broke last week. So I'm going to provide some context, and then I want to hear what you think about all of this. So the James Bond franchise has been controlled for decades by essentially one family, Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson, who are half siblings and offspring of Cubby Broccoli, one of the key producers of the original Bond movies. They took over from their father decades ago and have been behind every creative decision involving this franchise ever since, until last week when word came out that Broccoli and Wilson have now officially stepped back and relinquished control of James Bond to Amazon, who wanted Bond so badly that they paid $8.5 billion for MGM a couple years ago. But that deal did not give Amazon exactly what they wanted. The Broccolis were still there and were still controlling every aspect of Bond and clashing hard with the folks at Amazon behind the scenes, which is partly why we haven't seen any movement on a new Bond movie in a handful of years. But according to a report that came out late last week, Amazon coughed up another $1 billion to entice the Broccolis into going away. And it sounds like Michael Wilson, who was in his 80s, was ready to walk away anyway. And it kind of seems like Barbara just saw the writing on the wall and used this as an opportunity to get out. So what do you think about Amazon being in full creative control of this franchise now, Brad?
It's not the best news because we're talking about a questionable corporate entity, likely using this as an opportunity to wring everything they can out of one of the most famous figures in the history of pop culture. At the same time, I guess maybe the most beneficial thing is that Amazon does have a shit ton of money that they can throw at whoever they want to direct a James Bond movie. So that could be cool. And I hope that they are smart enough to do something that gives a filmmaker, you know, maybe a little more control than what the Broccolis and Broccoli and Wilson might have allowed previously. At the same time, there's concern, you know, that maybe the integrity of James Bond as a character and the things that define him and make him so great could potentially be weakened by not having their oversight anymore, because they, you know, did famously keep a lot of things about Bond in check and didn't make it so that he was used to, you know, sell stupid things and, you know, use him in embarrassing ways. So I think there's a lot of bad. I think there's some potentially some good. You know, I think I'm mostly curious just like what the next iteration of Bond looks like. You know, we had Daniel Craig's version, which was so deadly serious and gritty, and we haven't really had like a fun, you know, swinging James Bond in a while. So it'd be cool if they did something like setting it in the 1960s, you know, but with like a little bit of a contemporary approach to it, you know, something that maybe feels like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. or something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, the idea of creative risks seems weirdly maybe more on the table now that Amazon owns things. And like, yes, the creative risks might be amid a sea of middling Bond TV shows and stuff like that, where we kind of like lose enthusiasm overall for the franchise, kind of like what happened with Marvel, just like ramping up production on these Disney Plus shows that ultimately ended up not being great. But like, yeah, maybe this could be the opportunity for there to be an Idris Elba one-off Bond movie or something about an older James Bond, which I know has been something that fans have been floating for a long time as like a wish list thing that probably would never happen if the Broccolis had retained control. So yeah, if they can get like a massive name director to come in and like put their stamp on it in a way that filmmakers previously weren't allowed to, like maybe that could rejuvenate the Bond brand and kind of take it in an unexpected direction. But like, I think the dirty secret about Bond, Brad, to me, like I've seen all 25 of these movies. I think there's 27 if you count the non-Eon ones. There are only somewhere between 4 and 8 of those movies that are really good. You know, like I appreciate that they were all like essentially filtered through one family because it made it personal. But there's definitely some room for improvement, I think. It's probably fair to say. So what do you think about like the TV show idea, like that idea of like, you know, there maybe being like a Moneypenny show and a Q show and stuff like that?
No, thanks. I think, you know, I'm just not sure any of those characters are as interesting as James Bond to follow on their own. So I don't. Yeah, I feel like that's probably not the best decision. You know, maybe there's a cool Bond girl that might deserve their own, you know, if you get someone like Halle Berry as Jinx, you know, who was supposed to get her own spinoff movie at one time, but then it all fell apart. You know, if there's a cool character like that that you could do something with, then maybe. But otherwise, I just feel like it's the same thing with Marvel and Star Wars. You're just kind of like diluting the brand and make it feel less special.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I hope that it's not as bad as people are predicting. But then again, it is a massive corporation taking over a beloved property. So maybe I shouldn't set my expectations too high.
I will say, if there's one shameless piece of merchandising that I want to come out of this, it's that we need some proper James Bond action figures. There haven't ever really been any. I think Hot Toys or Sideshow did like a cool Sean Connery one at one point, and now it's like a crazy price on the secondary market. But like, if they could get like a licensing deal with someone like NECA or something like that to do cool detailed 6-inch figures of each of the James Bonds, like that would be awesome.
All right, so there's a potential silver lining on this whole scenario. All right, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the news that also came out around the same time. I think this was late last week as well, that Martin Scorsese is developing a crime movie that is potentially going to star Leonardo DiCaprio, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Emily Blunt, which is quite an unusual, unexpected foursome that I was not expecting to work together on a project. But they're working on something. I'm just going to read from Deadline's description, the log line of this movie. Imagine Robert De Niro's Jimmy the Gent character from Goodfellas, but as a ruthless Hawaiian crime boss based on a real figure who battled encroaching rivals for control of organized crime in Hawaii. So that's the sort of one sentence pitch there. And Nick Bilton, who directed a documentary in 2021 called Fake Famous, is going to be writing this. Were you as shocked at this potential pairing as I was, Brad, when you heard this news?
Yeah, because, you know, Dwayne Johnson hasn't exactly been the kind of actor who prestige filmmakers like Martin Scorsese want to work with. And that makes me feel like there's maybe a shift in how Dwayne Johnson is approaching the craft, or maybe he's like been doing some stuff behind the scenes to like be able to get this kind of stuff, because he is also going to be leading a Safdie Brothers movie soon. And I wonder if that is something that has turned some heads, you know, maybe certain people have seen clips and glimpses of that to see like what he's been doing and what he's been up to. But yeah, this is a really interesting pairing of talent. And, you know, if anyone can bring out the best in Dwayne Johnson, it's gotta be someone like Martin Scorsese.
Yeah, totally agree. And I would love it if The Rock actually took that trajectory in his career and started working with like true A-list filmmakers again. That would just be a really welcome change, I think, for me as a fan of some of his earlier stuff. I think this also seems to, I mean, if this is a project that is about the Hawaiian crime underworld, I think this could be a really interesting follow-up to Killers of the Flower Moon for Scorsese, who's somebody who shifted his perspective, I think, or shifted the perspective of the POV of that movie in a really fascinating way. You know, originally it was supposed to be about the white FBI agent who was kind of like stomped in to solve the case of the all the murders that were going on of these native folks in Oklahoma. And Scorsese decided, like, well into the working of the project, hey, we should actually foreground the native perspective in this movie. And so potentially he could do something similar here. And obviously Dwayne Johnson has like huge connections to Hawaii and all that. So yeah, really interesting idea. I wonder what like DiCaprio, Emily Blunt and The Rock like on screen together might look like. So we also have to talk about some other huge news that broke last night, which is that Kathleen Kennedy is expected to leave Lucasfilm by the end of this year. She has been running all things Star Wars since 2012 when Disney bought Lucasfilm, I should say. So what do you think about this, Brad? This is something that I think has been like rumored or whispered about for a long time, certainly from different corners of the fandom sphere and all of that. And like toxic bros have been wanting this for years. But what do you think about the idea that Kennedy is like, I guess, announced that her time at the company is coming to an end?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. I'm not really sure what else she can do at Lucasfilm. You know, she did the entire sequel era that followed Return of the Jedi. She ushered in the TV era of Star Wars to expand it, you know, gave us The Mandalorian, dug into different facets of Star Wars, sometimes for better, sometimes for worse. And I think that she's probably, you know, realized that if she wants to keep working in Hollywood, she probably maybe just wants to get back to doing what she does best, which is just producing movies. And as gifted and talented as Kathleen Kennedy is as, you know, a Hollywood executive and producer, I think that shepherding an entire cinematic universe like Star Wars was not something that she was necessarily built for. You know, she's not George Lucas. I don't think she has the same investment and passion in the mythology and lore. And, you know, I think that there's probably at least a few other people out there who might be better suited to inherit and help guide in the next era of Star Wars. But I'm thinking that if she's planning to leave by the end of 2025, she's probably also going to be helping get Lucasfilm's ducks in a row, probably squaring away who would be taking over for her potentially. And so that it's left in good hands and isn't just, you know, in shambles and like, letting someone in, coming in and overhauling everything. So, you know, I hope that there's, you know, a promising future here for Star Wars, because everything seems to be pretty questionable and worrisome and scattered right now. So, yeah, I think it's a good time. And, you know, it's upsetting though that, you know, that something like this will probably fuel some of the worst sides of Star Wars fandom. But, you know, there's no getting around that at this point.
Yeah. So in terms of the succession question, to me, it makes the most sense that Dave Filoni would take over. And I don't know what you think about that prospect or how likely that is. And, you know, there's been like rumblings about like Kevin Feige and stuff too, like for years going back, whatever, it's probably been 10 years or something at this point of people like wondering if he might be interested in leaving Marvel and heading up Lucasfilm or something. We don't know anything about who might take over, but what would you think about, I guess, either of those possibilities?
Filoni is probably the best bet. He's definitely a child of George Lucas. He was mentored by him. He gets Star Wars, but also I think Filoni's one shortcoming is that maybe he gets Star Wars a little too much and isn't willing to venture outside of the parameters in which George Lucas crafted the saga and some of the rules and things like that, that maybe keep it a little too constrained from venturing into new territories in a way that feels exciting and new and not just treading the same stuff we've already seen from Star Wars. You know, I don't necessarily know if he's experienced enough as like an executive to really be the only one in control. So pairing him with someone like Jon Favreau could be a good scenario, but I'm not even sure if this is something that Favreau would want to do, you know, because like if you've seen Favreau talk about stuff like regarding Star Wars, like Filoni's clearly the nerdy one who knows all the ins and outs of Star Wars lore, and Favreau is just like kind of the filmmaker who brings you know, his own visual acumen and like creativity and whatnot to the thing, and he has a little bit of that like economical filmmaking sensibility, which is probably something Filoni needs to like keep him in check. I just don't know if, you know, Filoni is interested in all that, because, you know, if he was, I feel like he probably would have stuck with Marvel stuff as the Marvel Cinematic Universe developed, you know?
So I
really don't know. And Feige, man, Feige did such a great thing by giving us the Infinity Saga from Marvel. But like, it's clear he's been misstepping recently as the Marvel universe expands and they've dealt with multiverse stuff. And I just don't know what Feige Star Wars looks like. And I don't know if you're going to bring someone like that in, it's almost like you would want him to like actually fully reboot or remake Star Wars so that you're not constrained to like fitting into what the mold of the original Star Wars is. Because honestly, there's a part of me that, as much as I love the original Star Wars trilogy and love the vibe of like what Star Wars stands for, I feel like that's one of the biggest things holding back the evolution of the entire franchise, is expecting every Star Wars thing to feel just like the original movies. And that's just not possible if you want to keep it interesting.
Yeah, 100%. And I just, I can't imagine a scenario where they bring Feige in and Filoni is still there as the, what is he now, like the chief creative officer or something like that of Lucasfilm. And it just doesn't seem like the visions that those guys would have would be able to work well together. But I don't know. Stranger things have happened, I guess. And it also would be kind of weird for like a Filoni and Favreau team to be taking over and heading up all things Lucasfilm while also releasing Mandalorian and Grogu next year. But then again, like James Gunn and Peter Safran are doing that at DC Studios, and like James Gunn is directing Superman that's coming out this year, so like that kind of thing is possible. So who knows, we'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll be talking much more about that in future episodes of the podcast when that kind of stuff is locked down and revealed. Before we take a break, I wanted to just briefly mention that there is an Extraction TV show that's coming to life at Netflix, and Chris Hemsworth, who is the star of the Extraction movies, is not going to be in it, or at least not going to be leading it. Potentially, I guess there's always room for cameos and stuff like that. But Omar Sy, who is on a Netflix show called Lupin or Lupin, he was also in Jurassic World. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He is going to be the star of the show, and Glenn Mazzara, who worked on The Walking Dead for a long time, is going to be the writer, EP, and showrunner on it. The Russos are involved as executive producers as well. I think Sam Hargrave, who directed these first two movies, is also on board sort of in a producing capacity. I was just curious, Brad, like, is this something that you might be interested in tuning into? Do you like Omar Sy enough as an actor? And do you care enough about the world of Extraction that you might tune in, even though there's no Hemsworth here?
This is the kind of thing I think that like I would need to see the trailer and see like what the show is like and about, you know, if it's doing the same stuff the movies did, then, you know, maybe it's worth checking out. I don't have any particular investment in Omar Sy as an actor. I think he's a good actor for sure, but he's not like one of the people that I'm like, oh man, I got to see the latest Omar Sy project. But yeah, definitely a good actor. And Extraction is, if they can keep up the, like the intensity and the innovation as far as the action and how they shoot it, then like it could be entertaining enough to check out. But I just don't know if you can keep that pace up across a TV series in the same way that you can a movie, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into a bunch of DC news.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All right. So on Friday, Slash Films Bill Bria was on the Warner Brothers lot in the room for a big presentation that James Gunn and Peter Safran did for DC Studios. This is, I think, the second sort of like journalist check-in type of thing that they've had since they've taken over creative control of DC. And yeah, basically, I just wanted to run through some of the highlights of that presentation. We have a bunch of articles about this up on Slash Film. We definitely don't have time to get into all of it here. But I just kind of wanted to run down some of their comments and kind of get your take on some of this stuff, Brad. So one comment that I think Saffron said was that I kind of was interested in. He said, "We don't serve just one kind of audience at DC Studios, so why just make one kind of film? In our unified approach, it frees us to tell a diversity of stories across a full spectrum of genres and scales, from tentpole events like Superman to family animated fare like Dynamic Duo, to indie-style chillers like Clayface. Our production goal is 2 live-action films and 1 animated film per year, and we're also targeting 2 live-action and 2 animated series for max per year." So just gut check on that, Brad. Is that too much stuff right out of the gate? Are you, like, worried hearing that that's their plan?
Yeah, 100%. It just feels like they're focusing too much on trying to create a whole big universe again and not focusing on just getting out a good movie and then expanding from there. Like, it feels like the same mistakes that DC made before all over again. And yeah, man, I don't know. I'm really worried about all this stuff.
Well, it seems like they've said, you know, we're going to be writer focused. We're not going to do things just to hit release dates. We're very much like, if the script is not ready, we're not going to just throw something into production and like try to fix it on the fly. We're definitely going to be more nimble as a company than that. But then, yeah, there's something like that where they unveil the number of things that they want to do. And it's like, whoa, 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 slow down, guys. Like, it's almost like hard to mash those two things together, you know? So I am definitely worried about that component as well. But then, like, they'll say something like, I think Bill asked, like, hey, is there the possibility that you guys might be willing to work on like a mid-budget experimental DCU movie in the future? And James Gunn said, if somebody that I really trusted came and said that they were doing My Dinner with Andre with fucking Wildcat and Black Canary sitting at a table discussing their lives for an hour and a half, that we can make for $1 million, yeah, then I would be open to that. That would be cool for me. So the idea that they're willing to do something like that, which Marvel is just like straight up not willing to make a movie like that, we would just never see that from the current iteration of Marvel Studios. That's like creatively exciting to me, but like, yeah, when you have this thing in the back of your head of like, oh no, this could just be one of 7 projects that they're going to put out in a year. I worry that like so much of the stuff is just going to get bogged down in like either slipping through the cracks or just like is going to start to feel like homework in a way that the MCU stuff has. So, and that's not like, what I want from DC.
Yeah, because it's just a lot, you know, like, and I feel like there's Marvel has this problem now, and I feel like DC is getting this problem before they even get started. Is like, I feel like they're limiting themselves by setting pretty much all of this in the same universe, like having all of it be interconnected and whatnot. Like you said, it becomes homework. You know, why can't you just make good individual movies? And sure, if someone fits in there, then maybe make them appear. But like, it feels like they're just trying to do this big grand plan kind of stuff instead of focusing on making a singular great thing on its own that maybe has some, you know, tangential connections to other stuff. I don't know. It just feels like they're putting the horse before the cart. Or the cart before the horse. Is that what the phrase is? I forget.
Yeah. Cart before the horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because like they said, there's another quote here where he talks about like, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he talks about, so Clayface is a movie that they're making. It's going to be like an R-rated body horror movie set in the DC universe, like in that continuity. And they basically said like, yeah, we can have something like Clayface, which is like this, you know, down and dirty, R-rated, grittier kind of thing. And then something like Supergirl, which presumably won't have that darkness at all. And then those two characters can operate in completely different genres in their own movies, but then come together in a separate movie. And like his quote is, how does that happen? I mean, that's what I think is, for me, that's fun, because we've seen a bunch of characters in the same universe and then meeting up, and it's not the same excitement as it used to be. But to be able to create totally different types of movies and then see how you can merge the two into something that's totally different from the first two, it's cool. So that's the quote. And like, yes, on paper, that sounds great. I just like, I guess it's too early in the life of this new DC universe to know if they're actually going to be able to pull that off successfully. But
yeah.
What do you think about the idea of an R-rated Clayface movie? This is the one that was written by Mike Flanagan and James Watkins, who did the remake of Speak No Evil is going to be the director of this one.
I trust everyone involved, so I'm curious, and I would like to see what they can come up with, but I think that all of those Spider-Man spinoffs like have left a bad taste in my mouth as far as movies following these side characters and giving them prominence when they don't have like the main driving force of what also made those characters interesting, and seeing them facing off with, you know, Batman or any of his other fellow superheroes. So I don't know. I think that they have the potential to craft something really interesting, but at the same time, I feel like it's hard to like get excited, because I don't know why you don't just make that movie without having like the Clayface, you know, branding attached to it, I guess. Like, it just feels like there's so much that like they're so desperate for recognition before the even movie is even out there, that like, oh, let's do this and, you know, and make it about a character that everyone's familiar with, instead of making something that feels original and new. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me being a grumpy old man, but yeah, that's where I'm at.
Do you think that they could introduce like brand new DC characters that have never been in the comics before? Is that something you'd be interested in seeing? Is that what you're talking about? Like, you'd rather see them make up new characters whole cloth than bring in existing characters?
No, I meant more so just like whatever the story is you have for Clayface, just do it and don't call him Clayface, you know?
Oh, but it would still be under the DCU brand or umbrella?
No. Just make a movie that's not tied to DC Comics characters or anything like that, and has no recognizable branding.
I see. Well, yeah, we're on the same page there. I just feel like James Gunn and Peter Safran are probably not the right people to make that movie, because they seem to have an edict and a full-time job that says that they need to make stuff for DC. So
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Okay, agree to disagree. The last thing that I wanted to mention is I remember you and I talking about the Superman trailer that came out not too long ago, and we were both like, I don't know, it seems real busy, like there's a lot of characters in there, and James Gunn responded to those concerns about Superman being an ensemble movie. He said, I do not think of Superman as an ensemble. It's about three characters. It's Superman, Lois, and Lex. Those are the three characters that's about. Everybody else serves that story. Although Edie Gathegi's character is pretty big, those are the three, and Crypto's pretty big too, actually. Felt like it really is about those. So I guess Mr. Terrific is the character that Gathegi plays there, and that's only one of the other heroes that we see in that trailer. We saw like Green Lantern and Hawk Girl show up too, and the Engineer was another one,
and Hambone. So Hambone, right?
Might as well. I remember us just being like, oh god, I don't know about this. But does that that statement from Gunn, where he's trying to alleviate our concerns, does that actually do anything for you, or is it kind of like a we'll wait and see, I'll be the judge of that type of situation?
Yeah, I'm fully in wait and see mode for Superman. You know, the impressive visuals in the trailer, an interesting tone, you know, obviously establishing a new world for Superman to be in. But yeah, I don't know. I need to see the movie before I really know for sure. I'm keeping my expectations in check, and it feels like there's a lot riding on this one. Then if it doesn't work, I don't know what that means for like the entire future, of DC. So yeah, it's tough.
Okay, well, yeah, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. And again, we have so many articles about the vision of Gunn and Safran at DC Studios, and you can definitely do deeper dives there. I'm going to link to a bunch of them in the show notes, because we just kind of barely scratched the surface here. So yeah, check out all that stuff at slashfilm.com. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. so you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.